joyful play,
purposeful work,
rugged outdoor living.
Our camps and conservation efforts
teach timeless skills
and kindle the spirit within.
Farm and wilderness.
Farm and wilderness.
Farm and wilderness.
Hey everyone, welcome to season 2 of the Farm and Wilderness podcast. It's so great to have you. Welcome back if you were with us last season, and welcome if this is your first time tuning in. My name is W. I'm the director of Timberlake and the director of camps here at Farm and Wilderness, and I'm so excited to be back doing the podcast for a big, big season. Now, if it's your first time tuning in, later this season, I'll be producing a primer episode on Farm and Wilderness, or F&W. But if you'd like to know a little bit more now, check out the first episode of season 1. Farm and Wilderness, or F&W, is a group of camps located in central Vermont with a variety of programs serving campers 4 to 17. In addition to that, we can serve nearly 5,000 acres of land, which is actually a big part of what today's episode is about. Now, last season, it was all about introducing F&W and sharing a little bit more about each of the camps. This season, we're focusing more on the impact of our camps on campers, families, and the state of Vermont. You'll be hearing from parts of our organization other than the camp directors, starting with today's episode. Now, so much of how we tell the story of F&W centers on the wilderness, the nature, our simply living, our open air cabins, our focus on the land and the natural world. It's in our value statement, it's in our mission, it's in all the photos on the website. This beautiful land that we are sitting on now is a big part of that. Now, there's a lot of programming in our camps around conservation and sustainability. However, there's a whole other part of the organization that is really thinking about these things all the time. That part of the organization is called Farm and Wilderness Conservation, or FWC for short. FWC does a ton, and so much of it happens outside of the summer. To give you just a little bit of sense, here are a few of the things they did in 2022 I pulled from the year in review. That year, they collaborated with the Conway School of Landscape Design to do 2 really cool projects. They had graduate students, one, do a regional ecological study of our land and made this beautifully bound book. And they also had a group of students create new site designs for what it could look like to redesign the entrance of our whole space, which is really cool. They did a ton of community learning and engagement opportunities and events. And they maintained the Aquatic Invasives Prevention Program for 2 bodies of water in the Black Ottauquechee Watershed, which is where Farm Wilderness is located. They also received a grant for a Clean Water Initiative Program from the Vermont Agency of Natural Resources, which is permitting FWC and F&W to remove the Rockefeller Dam, which is up at Peggy's Pond. They're doing big things, both to educate our surrounding community and our camps and our families on what F&W is doing to conserve and protect our land, and also how others can get involved. And they're involved on these policy decisions on the city and the state and the local and the county level, and really be partners with the surrounding areas with this land that we are so grateful and privileged to caretake. Now, you can trace the roots of FWC back a little bit ways. I want to start in 2018 when Farm and Wilderness and the Nineveh Foundation merged. Now, the Nineveh Foundation was established in 1996 and was the successor to the Wilderness Corporation, a for-profit that engaged in buying and selling land around Lake Nineveh, both for conservation and to support the program at Farm and Wilderness at the time. That organization grew to 1,500 acres around Lake Nineveh, and that's where 3 of our camps are located. Then in 2001, that merger between F&W and Nineveh was even more formalized when the Nineveh Foundation became the Farm and Wilderness Conservation and was now tasked to conserve not just that original 1,500 acres, but nearly all 5,000 acres that F&W owns. These 2 organizations share a common board of directors, an executive director, and other key positions, and allowed FWC to benefit from the scale of F&W and allow F&W to really have a partner to have a focus in the organization on such a critical and important part of who we are. Now, when I was a counselor at camp, I didn't know much about Nineveh Foundation or FWC, and it really wasn't until I became a director and started to work really closely with our conservation director that I began to understand, wow, just how much F&W is doing in this space and how much of it is concentrated really on one person right now and her interns that she's worked with over the last few years. Kelly Bierman was our director of conservation. And now I say was because when I recorded this last year, actually kind of November, December, she still worked with us. Her last day with Farmer Wilderness was actually last week, and she's moving on to another exciting, incredible job that is super well-deserved, and we are so excited for her. She's going to be super missed, and I still wanted to put this episode out really in her honor. She is so incredible, has so much knowledge that I really wanted our alumni, our friends, our family, the folks who are listening to this, to hear the good work that she is doing and the deep thinking she is doing on behalf of the organization around all of these things. Kelly is originally from Baltimore, Maryland and York, Pennsylvania. She got a BA in Environmental Studies and Anthropology and then went out to Madison, Wisconsin to study cross-boundary cooperation between neighboring landowners, which is pertinent to her work with us now. After completing her master's in forestry, Kelly moved to New Hampshire. She was looking for an opportunity that would combine her love for nature and education. Along with her background in natural science, she's worked with children in various other educational spaces like Big Brother, Big Sisters, Salvation Army tutoring, and a bunch of after-school programs. When she finally came to us, she worked in our admissions office for a while and then became our first conservation director with the merging of Farmer Wilderness and the Nineveh Foundation and the creation of FWC. Now, last thing, we were recording this in an active workplace in the resources building where maintenance and things happen. So a few times in the episode, you'll hear some of the tools and kind of people around us who are just doing their jobs and really caring for our land and our spaces. And then also Atlas, our camp dog at Timberlake. She was also in the room, so you might hear the jangle of her collar once or twice during this recording. I am so excited for this to be the first episode of our season 2 focusing on impact. And I think you're going to learn a lot from this one. Kelly is a wealth of information, and I promise you're going to hear something new you didn't quite know about Farm and Wilderness and Farm and Wilderness conservation. And now, my conversation with Kelly as she puts the wilderness in Farm and Wilderness. So I'm really excited to be sitting with you today. And most people who listen to our podcast are very familiar with Farm and Wilderness and the camps. And many are probably less familiar with the fact that like that is not the only thing that F&W does. We have this whole other thing that's pretty big, pretty emergent, pretty awesome. And so I'm excited for you to introduce yourself. What is your role and what is Farm and Wilderness Conservation?
Ooh, thank you, W. Yeah, so I'm Kelly Bierman. I'm the Conservation Director for Farm and Wilderness Conservation and Farm and Wilderness, because they are both sibling affiliated partner organizations and they work closely together. And yeah, so conservation has really been a part of Farm and Wilderness and the camps since its inception in 1939. But we're really taking a more focused look at that with the development of Farm and Wilderness conservation. And what does it actually mean to play in the area of conservation with everything else going on in the state of Vermont, with climate change, with resiliency on the landscape, with watershed health. So all of these things are kind of emergent across the world, across the state, across the country. And so our responsibility as a large landowner in a state is to kind of think like, how do we do more than we can in addition to all of our camp programming? Because we do own so much land around the camps. And so what is our responsibility and how do we go forward with that, with our values and everything else that we do?
So I think that was really good framing. And there are a few things I do want to come back to. I think you started off with this FWC is different and it's not a farm and wilderness. And I do want to come back to that. Mm-hmm. But I do want to start. You talked about farm wilderness being a pretty big landowner, which we are. And yeah, that is just a part of what you do. And so could you give some basics? What is FWC doing? What are maybe some of the buckets of work? Just what are y'all doing?
As a large landowner, there are really like three big buckets of work for Farm and Wilderness Conservation. And then under those three buckets, there are all these little sub buckets. So the three big buckets are sustainable forest management, watershed health and water quality protection, and then community engagement. So you can think of it as like land, water, and people. Mm-hmm. Generally, it's a very large summary of it. But underneath that, there's a lot of interconnected work, all of those, like if you took all three of those and layered them on top of each other, they're all related in some way. And they have a lens and a connection that are just interwoven and you can't like separate them. So like we need healthy forests because it contributes to healthy water. And we want people to come out and enjoy both of those things through recreation, through education, our camps. And so it's all connected, but we kind of talk about our work in those kind of three big buckets.
Let's dive into those buckets. Mm-hmm. Let's start with that first one.
So sustainable forest management. So what is that? So it's a lot of different things. We have, among all of the lands we have around the camps, we have about 8 different types of forests, that are all contributing through different tree species and contribute to, biodiversity, and wildlife habitat, and then all these really beautiful lands that our campers enjoy and that we have trails around. And our management is through myself, our licensed, forester, Silas Roberts, who's been forester for us since 1996,
wow,
I believe. And through neighboring landowners, through state folks. And what we do is we work together as people to better understand the forests that we have through monitoring. So just going out, walking the woods, seeing what's happening, seeing how there might be some human impact, seeing how wildlife is maybe going up and down in terms of population around the area and how that impacts the forest, seeing how climate and climate change impacts the forest. And then just that in of itself is a lot of work, and you have to spend a lot of time and you have to have a lot of patience just to observe what's happening in the environment around you. And then you invite people, different experts in, like ecologists, biologists, hydrologists, when you notice something interesting, and so that you can learn more about it. So creating that space for all these people to connect and work together to promote forest management is one task. We have a management plan that's 10 years long, and it helps us plan for timing of checking in different areas in our forests. And maybe we mark boundaries in that plan just to make sure that we're not encroaching on our neighbors in any way. And also to mark our conservation easements, which is protected land that's not supposed to be developed. So we want to make sure that those are clearly marked for the purposes of our plan. It also helps us understand if we are going to do any cutting. So are we going to take any trees? What are they going to be used for? And how are we going to do that? And the way we take trees, it's very small. We don't clear cut. We take trees usually one at a time, or in small groups. And that helps the forest canopy be healthy because you're not creating an even canopy. So a canopy that's all in line with each other. It's different levels of canopy, which is great for wildlife, especially birds. And it's also helping the forests get back to old growth characteristics, which if you think about all the forests before European settlement, we had a lot of really old forests here. Europeans came, settled in, used to cut a lot of these forests down for timber and lumber and to make room for farms and development. And Vermont lost about 70% of the forest. It's made a comeback, but they're all really young forests and they're all growing up at the same time. So in our forest management plan, we like to think about how can we encourage the forest to repair and go back to some of those characteristics before settlement. So we do that in our forest management plan, but it takes time. It takes we take a decade at a time because forests grow on a much slower timeline than humans do. So it's a little bit of our forest management. Wildlife enhancement a little bit. Sometimes we'll cut down a small area of trees so that we have an opening. There's different wildlife that like different openings and heavy cover. It also supports carbon sequestration. So what parts of the forest are we leaving to store carbon? What parts are we opening up so that trees can grow and sequester carbon faster? So we're learning about that as we go and working with experts to better understand how we can manage our forests. And sometimes the plan, we have to write in the plan that we're not doing anything. We're just looking at the forest and seeing what it does and learning from it. And we don't take any action at all. And that's actually part of the work, is when you recognize that you don't have to do an action. You just see what's going on. So that's forest management in a nutshell. There's other things too, yeah. But
I think it's something really interesting about thinking about the forest here at camp. And like, for most folks who are probably not familiar with Vermont history, the idea that a lot of our campers come think this is old growth forest, and it's not. And that much of the land we are on right now, even where we're recording, was clear cut at one point, which is pretty profound, right? As you look up those trees, these are really young trees. And I'd love for you to give us a sense of what is our land like, and really helping center for our listeners who know where Firefly Song or the Barn Day Camp are, or where Sam Camp is. What are some of the like features of our land? You mentioned animals. Like, what would we find if people were doing the walks that you were walking and really seeing our land?
Yeah. So especially around some of the, I'm going to use the Woodward camps, so the camps along Farm and Wilderness Road in Plymouth, as an example. We like to go on one of the trails, which we like to call Peggy's Trail or Peggy's Pond Trail or Plymouth Knot Trail. It has a lot of different names, but it's a great trail because it does tell a really good story of the land use in this area. The first beginning of it, there's a lot of really tall, big white pines. And those are typically the pioneer species after these young forests start to grow. You have old agricultural fields and a new forest is beginning. White pines really love sunlight, and they shoot straight up and they get really big. And then you have all these other species growing underneath them. So you'll see that on the landscape. And I try to point that out, or have people guess, like, what are the biggest, tallest trees right here in the forest? And then as you move along, you start to see a different species composition. So you'll start to see eastern hemlock, which is another pine. It's really cool. It's one of my favorite trees. And we start to compare the differences between white pine and eastern hemlock. And eastern hemlocks take a longer time. They're slower to grow, and they're usually found underneath the canopy. And so we talk about, like, what might have happened for more eastern hemlock to be here, more white pine to be here. Perhaps there was a larger opening in this area, and that's why we're seeing more white pine. And then you'll continue to move along, and you'll see kind of this open area with a lot of really tiny, tiny trees, and they're really jam-packed together. And that was an opening created over a decade ago for wildlife. We pause there and think about, like, what is that area doing for the land now? It's sequestering carbon really fast. Faster than some of these older, bigger trees are, which is storing carbon. So we pause and take a look at that. And then we'll start to see a lot of stone walls, which evidence of old agricultural areas and other things. We'll pause and take a look at that and talk about, like, all the different land uses that we have experienced over decades, centuries here, and how that impacts the land and how we use it as well. And then we get to the end, which historically has been since 1970. There's a pond there, it's Peggy's Pond. There's an earthen dam there. But now we're working on a project to drain the pond. We're going to remove the dam, and we're going to allow that land to go back to wetland, which is what it was prior to the pond. And we're working with the state on that. So we're moving the dam, doing some native plants, and then just letting nature take its course. So that's a really good walk for our campers and other people to take. And it is a really nice snapshot of, like, we're talking about the different forests and land use in this area. It is similar across all of our other camps as well, but each walk you take around the land, around the camps, has a different story depending on what's there. There might be an area with more vernal pools along the hike, and a lot more wet areas. There's a lot of wetlands around Lake Nineveh, up around Sam Camp. And all those wetlands have different features. So there's fens, there's marshes, there's the floating bog in Woodward Reservoir, and they all have different species and functions. And it's really cool to talk about how those play out along the landscape. And they're just so close to the camp, so there's just so much to explore around the camps, either doesn't matter where, every camp has like within 50 yards, a really cool natural feature to go look at, or a cultural feature, which we call those old stone walls or cellar holes or old stone foundations. Trying to think, there's a lot without, I could make a whole list of them. I can give them to you if you want to put them on the podcast.
You really could. And I remember doing walks with you and just how impressed I am on knowing just the sheer amount of information you are holding because of the complexity of land. And it's really easy for, again, a staff member or a camper to just like, oh, it's a tree, it's cool. But like, there are actually so many complexities and layers underneath that I am really impressed to like hear about the work and know that we're doing that and kind of proud of the work that Farm Wellness and really you is kind of holding it for so many of us are doing. Mm-hmm. Before we go to water, I do want to stick on this complexity of land, and you'd mentioned a little bit around kind of landowners and things like that. So I'd love to hear a little bit about both how much land are we talking about the Farm Wellness has, and what are some of the work you do to work with area landowners, the state, things like that, that really complex web that you are a part of on behalf of Farm Wellness and the land that we're caretaking to make sure that we are good neighbors.
So in total, if you take all of our lands we're responsible for, we have about 4,900 acres, and that's in the towns of Plymouth. It's in the town of Mount Holly, Bridgewater, Chelsea, Brookfield. And the complexity of that is that there is a big Venn diagram of different parts of that, acreage that's enrolled in different programs that support the work that we do. So a portion of that, I think close to 4,000 acres, is under conservation easement in Forest Legacy. So there's six Forest Legacy conservation easements. And basically what that means is that those easements protect those blocks of land from ever being developed. And that was a core goal in the history and development of farm and wilderness conservation. The history goes back 30s, 1950s, when there was a lot of development and land being sold off. A lot of agriculture was changing. A lot of farms were being sold off. Killington ski resorts were starting to become popular in 1950s. Through that development, there was a lot of opportunities to purchase land in order to keep it from being developed into condominiums for the ski areas. And so that was an opportunity that past folks of this organization took. They were able to purchase this land and then eventually in the 90s and early 2000s participate in this Forest Legacy program, which is this federally funded state program. And the purpose of it is to protect large forest blocks and keep it forested, keep it from being developed, and to protect wildlife habitat, particularly in areas of the Green Mountain and within wildlife corridors. That's not all of our land. A majority of it is in conservation easement. And we work with the state of Vermont on making sure those easements are being kept, monitoring them, making sure that there is open public access for low impact recreation. And so that means hiking, wildlife watching, hunting is available and open to the members of the public, and that we don't have issues with ATVs driving all over those parcels. And as a responsible landowner, we do our best to make sure we put the proper signage up, that we give people the right information about how to access these parcels, and that they are conserved, and the importance of having them within this development and wildlife corridor. So that's one program that we're in. The other program that we're in is current use or use value appraisal programs. There's many different names for it, but it's a state program that essentially gives landowners a tax break for maintaining their forests and keeping their forests in sustainable timber production. So Vermont wants to be able to use its forests for its renewable resources. So taking trees and providing local lumber sources. So we don't have to source lumber from, you know, across the country, but also do it in a way that is managing forests so that they can grow back really well, and also for ecological health. And so current use basically says that we need to have a licensed forester and we need to have a 10-year forest management plan. And most of our land, most of that 4,900 acres is in the current use program and overlaps with the forest legacy easements as well. And though there's two different state departments that manage those programs, they work together. I work with them to figure out what we need to do to be good participants in those programs. And then at the same time, many of our neighbors, which includes the state, we have Coolidge State Forest that abuts most of our land. They're our neighbors. We work with them on making sure that we have, if there's any shared goals across the landscape, that we're doing them together in partnership. Do we have similar signage? The signage says the same things. If we have somebody who's hiking across our land and going into the Coolidge State Forest, as an example. And then we have our other local residential neighbors that we work with just to make sure that they know that they can come hike on our land if they want to, that we work with them on, if we share a shoreline with them on Woodward Reservoir or Lake Nineveh, that we're working with them to better understand shoreline protections and if there's shared work that we can do together, and participating in any other state programs or funding, grant funding for projects that might impact both us or them. And then there's just other organizations like us or other conservation organizations or ecological health organizations or education organizations that we work with to partner on initiatives to bring resources or education or skills development to the community. So just the other week, we hosted a workshop to help folks who are interested in better understanding how they can navigate their lands, or, you know, if they're out hiking at a park or a national forest, how to use mapping tools to help them do that. And the mapping tools we use at Farm and Wilderness Conservation are very similar to some of our other partner organizations. So we, our county forester came and supported that program, and we had 15 people come from all over the state to learn some of these skills for tools that we use to do our work. So it was really nice to be able to share that with other folks in the area and then tell them about our special place here. And when they came, they're like, this is so beautiful. This is so nice. I didn't even know this was here. Or I haven't been back to this area. And I thought all you did was summer camps. And here you are, you're doing all this great work for the land and sharing with people these different opportunities. So that's just a little bit about what we do with other people, other organizations and the state. But I think there's a lot of possibilities and opportunities for the future that I'm really excited about. So
I think it's really profound how I hear you talk about the interactions with all these different stakeholders, right? It really is us as an organization, institution, a summer camp, a conservation organization, the state, the federal government, our neighbors, all of these things. And the word that comes to mind is interdependence. And that on a camp level, we talk about that all the time, right? It is in the ethos of our camps, but you are really expanding that to imagine our interdependence with just the wider community, I think, in a really profound way. And that I, as a director and the other directors, aren't thinking in that way in the same way. I'm excited for us to start thinking of that in kind of those ways. And we've sort of talked about those things. But I really want to lift that up, that like interdependence isn't just the camps hanging out together or like my big lodgers and first lodgers. It is actually when everyone is gone in the off season, like we have to be good neighbors to the cities, the county, and the state. So yeah. I think that's really great. Yeah. Speaking of interdependence, let's talk about water a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is my favorite topic to talk about, especially as we're talking about the interdependence of camps, because I'm trying to get folks to think about, we have our Woodward Reservoir, right? And we have the shoreline and about four camps along that shoreline. And then we have Lake Nineveh, Sam Camp is up there, Flying Cloud's up there, Red Spruce Grove, all of our neighbors up there. So we have these two water bodies that we talk a lot about. So what I'm trying to do is for myself and for when I talk about water and water resources, in our backyard, let's talk about the watershed. So let's expand our lens, outward from those two water bodies and think about how all the water, on the land that we use is connected. Where does it go? And what are the things that we need to do to protect water quality so we can continue to have clean water to drink or recreate in. And so when I'm really trying hard when I go visit camps and we're doing anything water related, if we're out on doing a canoe trip, or if we're just going to go to the shoreline and have a chat, or we're going to talk about aquatic plants, anything, I try to bring in the concept of what watershed are we a part of? What river does Woodward connect to? And where does that river go? And the fact that both Lake Nineveh and Woodward Reservoir are at the headwaters of their each individual watershed and the expanded watershed. And what does that mean? And so we're trying to do field trips that include a watershed tour. So we start at either Woodward Reservoir or Lake Nineveh. We go along the Ottauquechee River, which Woodward goes, dumps into, and then the Ottauquechee connects to the Connecticut River, which is the big over 400-mile river that runs through New England and dumps out into the Atlantic Ocean. And then from the Connecticut River, we come back along the Black River, which is connected to Lake Nineveh. And so I try to get everybody to think about a little more broadly, like, yeah, this lake is really cool. We love to swim in it. We love to kayak. We love to canoe in it. It's beautiful. And when we're out here, let's think about, like, you know, as you're contemplating and think about the broader aspect of water in the landscape. And then you start to think about, well, where does this small stream go as you're going for a hike? Does it go into Woodward? Does it go connect somewhere else? And then you think about, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't build our shelter here or have a fire so close to the river because it may impact the water. Let's move it back. Let's create some buffer around our waters. And then you start to think about, ooh, this shoreline is starting to erode into the lake or the reservoir. What can we do to help it? Maybe we can move some of our buildings around. Maybe we can divert some of our roads so things aren't washing into the water as easily. So I think just... and also it goes for the land too, like putting into perspective, all the cool stuff that's right there at the camp, but how is that connected through the forests and the water? And, SAM camp is connected to, Timberlake, for example, through the water. And so that's really cool to think about that and the interconnectedness of all of that. And then of course, like, then you bring in the people with that and how that plays together. It's a really powerful thing. And it's a really powerful thing for especially children to think about that in the face of climate change and how all of this is connected. So that's, to me, that's the most important thing, is to get kids thinking about, like, yeah, this is a really cool plant. Yeah, this is a really cool lake. And how is this connected to, maybe my home that it's states away, right? And it is, eventually it is, if you think about all those links. So so the place that they're here at summer is their home, and also it's connected to their home wherever they are. And I think about that a lot when I go out into the woods as well and onto the lake, and it's really cool.
What do those conversations look like with our kiddos? I'm so curious, the difference mm-hmm. between our youngest babies at the BDC and the middle schoolers at TL and the high schoolers there at Tamarack Farm. What are these? How do you talk to them about that? What are the events you do with them during the summer? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think, and I also try to do it in a way that's not, doesn't feel like school, mm-hmm. right? When you start to bring in like different terms like watershed and other things, these are things that are, they are learning about in school as well. And so I try to put myself in a place like, what would I want to do in order to experience this and learn this, but also have a lot of fun and also just see things maybe I don't get the opportunity to see all the time when I'm at home. Sometimes there's some kids who are just like really into it. They want to show you all the information they know about like yep. the plant or the forest or the watershed, and other kids are just like, I don't want to do this. This is like school. I don't want to do this. So you're trying to find a happy medium where the kids who are really excited about it and want to tell you everything they know about it, and then also want to absorb all that information, facts, stats, you know, all of this, the Latin name for the plant. Then also make it an environment for those other kids that's not their thing. What they want to do is experience the outdoors. They want to have a fun adventure. But there's also an opportunity for them to learn at the same level as the other kids who are very like detail oriented. So that's why I really love, doing the watershed tour, for example, because it is an experience where we get to traverse the landscape, see all these different water bodies, see how they're connected. But then we go to these really cool swimming holes, which is just so fun in the summer to experience. And each swimming hole has its own unique characteristic. And they have fun at the swimming hole at the Queechee Gorge, which is on the Ataquechee. And all I need them to know is that the Ataquechee is connected to Woodward Reservoir. And then they can go and jump off rocks and go into the river and try to swim against the current. And that type of experience for them, they can connect that with, like, when they're back here at camp and they're swimming in Woodward, they're like, oh, Woodward is connected to the Ataquechee. And I know that because I had a blast swimming at that swimming hole. And then we went all the way to the Connecticut and we swam in this massive river that dumps into the Atlantic Ocean. So trying to cultivate experiences like that where they can make those connections is really my goal. Not really there to tell them all these like technical terms about like the watershed, riparian buffers, and all of this other stuff. That's really cool to me. And then maybe really cool to some of the kids at camp. But using this as a way to create these experiences for campers and for everybody else that we talk to and are neighbor with is my goal.
So I think that's really great. And it feels, I'm excited for the work that the directors will be doing with you to further integrate these concepts, because it really is a natural kind of evolution and connection to the work we're doing in the camps, because it's focused on experiential learning. You were splashing in the water as we were talking about it. We are not just at a desk looking at maps together. Right. So you said there's one more bucket and we've already it's been sprinkled in, right? All of this is so connected, but that community engagement piece, tell me more about that. And I have seen so many like really cool things emerging from kind of your corner of the organization on this. So I'm excited for you to share. What are you doing with community engagement?
Yeah. So that can mean community engagement means a lot of things. And I think a lot of people gravitate like, oh, you work with the summer camps. Yes. That is one of the things. And it's really exciting. And we're developing that, like you said, in partnership with the directors and where we want to take our programming. But also we need to develop relationships with our neighbors that are just right across the way from us, figuring out what are their goals for how they want to live on the land and care for the land. Do we share any of those goals? How can we support each other in that shared overlapping thought process, and then our partners in maybe some other schools. So like Castleton University, I've talked with faculty from there and thinking about like, how can our land support the learning that their students do? And we've already engaged in a couple different projects with them. One is the mapping of our sugar bush, which is sandwiched right between Timberlake and Tamarack Farm. And that was a really great experience for two recent graduates there. And then thinking about how can we inform people about all the cool natural features and public access that our lands support. A lot of folks come to me and says, I didn't even for that to be done.
It was a great experience with Castleton.
Yeah. And then talking with, just local folks in the community or people that come up to visit Vermont, just letting them know that we do have really great trails and, forested areas that they have access to. They can go out and enjoy, year round, and all these special natural features that they can observe and develop, and they can have the opportunity to develop a relationship with the lands that we have here. So part of that will be like hosting hikes that people can come to, especially hikes that people of all levels and experiences can enjoy. So not going straight up the ridge here, at Woodward on, Limber Gem is one of my favorite trails. If you just want to go right up,
straight up
for a half a mile. That's not everybody's jam. It's not my jam half the time. So what are the areas, around that most people could just come and enjoy for a little bit, regardless of where they're from, their experience level, or their fitness level, or their ability. And so we are looking at all the different ways we can give people access to that. And a lot of that is developing information, maps, just letting people know on a website or social media, or just talking to them on a phone. Other ways are kind of thinking about where could we put a new trail that would better serve the community. And so working with other people from the state, from staff that are here, trail design experts, thinking about the future of that and how we can support that. We also work with local after-school programs. We have 8 different schools in 8 different towns that we go and visit to do an activity, either a farm-based activity. So I think like today, I think Lucy and Elizabeth are taking goats to visit the Mount Holly School and to talk about how to feed goats, how they care for goats, what do goats do and how do they benefit the farm and the landscape. And then last week we did activities around beavers and wetlands and dams. And we talked a little bit about how wetlands are an important part of our environment and the ecosystem services they provide. And then they got to pretend to be beavers and they built dams.
yes.
And they really love that activity. And they want to tell you all the things they know about beavers. And then we do a fun game where they can do a true or false around beaver facts. So that's just another way. It's just visiting these local schools and bringing fun activities to them, especially if they don't have the ability to come here to our camps, or we don't have the ability yet to do field trips. I also have to call now. As we're developing all these relationships with partners, with experts around the state, like ecologists, biologists that we work with. Those are really great people to connect our local community or, you know, our stakeholders, wherever they are, camp families, donors, or just other people that want to support our work. We can work to highlight those people and how they support our work by, you know, providing Zoom events or talking to them about the cool features on our land and writing up different blog posts and sharing that with people. So just like creating all these opportunities for people to engage wherever they are, either physically on the land or taking the really cool things that are happening out on the land to them, either on our website, or having them engage in a Zoom webinar, with these folks. So recognizing those opportunities and that our relationships are also should be shared with other folks, because these folks are also really just generally cool people that have a lot of fun information to share. And I've learned so much from them. So, why not also provide those opportunities for everybody else? So that is also a big part of our work. And then lastly, with community engagement, and I said this a little bit already, but as a landowner, we, a large landowner with all the values and the mission that we have, it's really important for us to cultivate responsible recreation. And so what does that look like? That looks like, public access, but also protecting ecological health. So we're not going to put a trail through a wetland because that would have detrimental impacts for wildlife and the habitat. It also wouldn't be very fun for the hikers because it'd be really wet. So having a plan for how we cultivate this recreation and how that impacts our forest management and informs it and also water protection as well. I think those are all there's more community engagement stuff. There's always more. Yeah. That's what I really love about this job is because it's ever evolving. There's always new possibilities. There's new opportunities. And then everything is connected. And so that just creates an infinite amount of ways to do this work and to learn from each other and the land. So that's my favorite part about the job. So
yeah. We've covered a lot of the what, and there is just lots and lots of layers and layers of that what, and we could probably continue going on. The next couple of things I want to talk to you about are a little bit more theoretical and I guess philosophical, right? You and I have had conversations in the past around the word conservation and conserve versus sustainability or in concert with sustainability. So I'm curious your thoughts, like why conservation and what does that word mean for you and for folks who are hearing and maybe asking a similar question as I am, right? What does it mean to, it feels like the way you approach this work is much more expansive than just, I guess, kind of a dictionary definition of conservation. So I'm curious to hear more about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, conservation is, it's a lot of different meanings for a lot of different people. And it's one of those things for me personally that it is what you make it, right? So there's historical context to conservation. There's some negative connotation with conservation, especially when we talk about ownership of land and who has access to that land. And if we start to bring in our history, European settlement, stealing of indigenous land. So that is just a really complex history that feeds into that word too. And every day I have different feelings around that word. It's in the title of my job. It's in the title of Farm and Wilderness Conservation. But I always come back to like, it doesn't matter so much about the word itself. It's about what we do here. And I think the very simple reason of why it's Farm and Wilderness Conservation, why my title is Conservation Director is because most of the work we do with like the state also uses that term. So it's it's a very industry term. And it also, you know, represents different ideals amongst different people, which we have the opportunity to engage with them on. So when I talk with Tamarack farmers, I ask them, I was like, when you hear the word conservation, what do you think? And I get a mixed bag of things, which is really cool in some ways, because then I can start a conversation to talk more about why they think that way. How did they get there? I think one camper said conservation sounds very federal.
Interesting.
And so I was like, all right, let's talk about that more. Why do you think that way? And a lot of the reasoning was because every time the word conservation comes up in their life, it's tied to the government. I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. You know, there's all these easements, agreements, legal documents, usually tied up in conservation. And then we talk about like, but then we also have a lot of really great programs and grants that support, open public access recreation for a lot of different people. That's part of conservation. Another part of conservation are all these ecologists and biologists working to understand and perform research so that we can better understand our natural world and also prepare for climate change and how we can have resiliency if we have more flooding in the future. How are we gonna face that? And how are we gonna make any changes that we need to protect our infrastructure, but also protect ecological health around that infrastructure? And what can we do to mitigate flooding in the future? So one example of that is the state and us, Farm and Wilderness Conservation, we're working to restore some wetland areas. Wetland areas are really great to absorb water, filter water, and help mitigate flooding in the future. So all of that is put into the field of conservation, and people use different words to describe it. But to me, conservation is a ever evolving thing. And that because it does mean different things to different people, what a beautiful thing to start a conversation and get people talking about their perspectives and how that folds into it. Because there's no way that conservation is just one thing, especially when we're facing climate change. Yeah, it's a complicated question. I think you'll get a different answer from me depending on the day. But I think we'll just go with the fact that it does mean a lot of things to a lot of people, including me. And all the work that we do, then it just folds in beautifully for that reason. So, but on paper, conservation, we have conservation easements, and therefore...
I mean, I really appreciate your nuanced and expansive kind of thoughts on that. And the fact that there's a different answer for me every day to me really points to, I think, the health and vitality of the work that we are doing, right? That we are not an organization that is stuck in the mud, so to say, right? Like, it is something that, what is our role in this? Why are we doing this? And what does it mean to be doing this work is still evolving as we as an organization and people continue to evolve and get better and more thoughtful around these things. So in a moment, I want to get to like you and why you're doing this work. But before we get to the why for you, I'm curious just to hear, why should we be doing this work at Farm and Wilderness, right? It's really easy to say, we are just a summer camp, we do fun things, cool, and we happen to have a bunch of land, cool, that we could just be hanging out on. Why is the organization you and I work for in such a great place to be doing this work? Why should we be thinking about this work? Just why Farm and Wilderness in this great work?
Yeah, I mean, let's start with the connection with the camps, right? So we are growing kids to think about the skills they need to be leaders, to work with their community members, and work with each other on the land and with the water. So all these kids are going to be growing up and facing the challenges of a world that does include climate change, that does include facing hard decisions around conserving land or building housing. Housing is a big issue right now in Vermont, as it is across the country. And so we're preparing these kids to just think about, with different lenses on and different perspectives, about our impact and how we identify living in the environment around us, because we are part of it. So the camps offer a really great opportunity to create that really strong connection and to just explore this special place, and also for them to think about, like, when they go home, how do they take those skills and those conversations and the experiences from here, and how do they develop that at home? And you think about all the kids that that come to camp here, hundreds of kids. And the impact of that is, when you really think about it, is huge. And these kids are going to grow up and they're going to do a lot of different jobs, and they're going to work in a lot of different areas, and they're going to volunteer, they're going to have their own kids, like all of these things. And the skills and experiences they have here are going to show up in different pieces of their lives. So I think that when I think about that, that is like the biggest thing for me, is for these camps to have opportunity to learn from these lands and to have those experiences, because they're going to be the leaders of the next generation. And it doesn't matter what they do, whether they're, you know, a biologist, ecologist, conservation technician, whatever. Doesn't matter what job they have, they're going to understand that no matter where they're at or what they're doing, they have a piece and a part of being part of a solution and living and working with community members to protect natural resources wherever they are. I think in general, F&W also should be doing this work because there's just a lot of, there's also a lot of plans and initiatives in the broader, in the state going on right now that we have an opportunity to contribute towards. So there was a bill passed this year, H-126, which is basically says the state would like to have 30% of Vermont's land in conservation by 2030 and 50% by 2050. And we're part of that. We're part of supporting that initiative. And it's to promote resilience and biodiversity in this state and broader New England. There's also lots of, there's a climate action plan that the state has. How can we support that? And there's a lot of different ways we can do that. So I think with the camps and with broader goals across the state, we certainly have a piece in all of that. And I'm excited to figure out what our next steps are for that.
Yeah. What's your why? Why are you doing this work?
When I really sit down and think about it, I think, I mean, if you would have asked me this like 5 years ago, I would have said, oh, I just love working in the outdoors. And that's true. I do love that. And what a beautiful place to be able to walk out my office and go for a walk in the woods. I think the additional reason why, and what I've really come to realize is that, I think it provides me with challenges and opportunities that lets me learn about, other people and other perspectives that are different than mine. And I may disagree with them, but that's a really great challenge to have. Like, how do I hold that? So I've met so many different peoples with all kinds of expertise. I've learned so much from them, which is a really awesome thing for me. And then at the same time, I have the opportunity to share what I've learned to them, what I've learned from them with other people in a lot of different ways. So it just provides a lot of variety and a really like awesome challenges to that feel really satisfactory to tackle. And, you know, I've always liked the intersection of working with kids and the community, in the outdoors. That's always what I've done. And so it's a very natural fit for me to be here. So yeah, I think all those things combined, it makes me really excited to get up and come to the office because sometimes I don't even know what the day will bring me. Sometimes I'm like, I'm probably going to be in the office today, writing a lot of emails, communicating, you know, looking at my calendar. And then halfway through the day, I'd be like, nope, I got to go over to Lake Nineveh to check on this. And I'll be out in the woods for like 4 hours. That's fun for me. And I love doing that. And I know I will never stop meeting, new people, whether it would be at camp, whether it be at some kind of, forest ecology conference, whether it be, in the neighborhood. I know I haven't met all of our neighbors in this area. But I know I will eventually. So yeah, that's just really fun and exciting for me. And that's why I really love my job.
What's in the future for farm wilderness conservation? Where do you want to take it? Where do you want to take us?
Well, that's not really up to me solely. But what I really would love to see happen and what I am working on is trying to develop as many relationships and collaborations as possible so that can better inform where we're going and what we're doing. So that's currently what I'm focused on a lot right now, is just reaching out to other organizations, seeing what their goals are, how they match up and what we could do together, whether that be support a, you know, a workshop that we can open up to, the community or talking with Colleen, our farm director, about after school programming, or, you know, maybe hosting a story time with a hike for the local community, or working with our county and state foresters on expanding our 10-year forest management plan, all creating those opportunities and avenues to talk with people about decisions we make together, I think is the future and what I hope to do. So that it's just not, it's not all on me, because it's such a huge thing to be a part of. And it takes a lot of people with a lot of knowledge to make some of these decisions about what work we do. So I would say that's the biggest thing right now, is just talking with other people, seeing what their ideas are, shaping some of our goals for the next couple decades. And, you know, working with folks like you, the directors for camp, talking about how can we develop some program initiatives in the future. So that's, I think, where we are headed right now, is just we're in kind of a planning phase. Like, what is Farm and Wilderness Conservation hoping to do? And obviously, it's going to be around those three big buckets again. It's going to be around sustainable forest management, watershed health, and community engagement. Yeah, I'm excited to see what will happen. I sometimes get impatient, because I'm just like, I just want to have a speaker series, like 10 people long. And I want to be able to take the campers to all the field trips, to all the really cool places around. And I have to slow down and say, no, you alone can't do that. So then how are you going to support other people and share with them all the cool stuff that is possible in the future? And so relationship building is a thing that's happening right now, for sure.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I'm excited for the work to continue. Are there other things we haven't covered that you want to make sure that folks know or are thinking about around this work?
I mean, I could go on and on. We could get out maps. I could show you some cool features on the land and talk more about those, list out the cool plants, talk about my favorite areas. But I think we've covered a good chunk of it.
Before we say bye, I want to give you a chance to, where can folks find information on Farm and Wilderness Conservation online? They want to know more. Where can they be looking?
Yeah, so the best way online will be our social media accounts. So FW Conservation on Facebook and Instagram. And then we have a new website being launched on November 10th, this Friday, www.fwcvt.org. And then we're trying to see if we can do a monthly newsletter. So that way we can update folks on any events, or hikes, or a new blog post, or just, announcements around the state that we're really excited about. And you can sign up for that newsletter on the website. So those would be the best ways.
Amazing. Congrats on the new website. That is a big lift. And the directors were actually just talking about that we learned things from your Instagram. We were talking about birds actually this weekend a lot, and things that we've learned from your Instagram. Kelly, it has been amazing. I really appreciate you taking some time to chat with me, and good luck with the rest of the off season.
Thanks, Debbie. Thanks for having me. This has been great.
That was my conversation with Kelly, the incredible former conservation director. We'll miss her and wish her all the best in her next job. If you'd like to register for camp, apply for a job at, or just learn more, check out farmandwilderness.org. We are also on YouTube, where you'll find staff talking about the experience and many, many more videos. You'll also find us on Instagram and TikTok, where we're featuring staff testimonials. And be sure to go ahead and Google Farm Wilderness Conservation and check out everything they have. Thanks to our guest, Kelly. Music by Emmett Powers, recording and editing done by myself, and thanks to everyone at Farm and Wilderness who helped make our summers possible. Now, our camp vocabulary word for this episode comes from a place near our Camp Firefly song, and that's Peggy's Pond. Peggy's Pond is a great short hike from FS and is one of our beginner hikes that really allows you to see our sustainable forestry practices, the evolution of our forests around camp, and that new dam removal project that F&W is working on that I mentioned at the top with the state of Vermont. We send campers there all the time, and right now we joke it's more like Peggy's Crater. There's no water as it awaits this restoration project back into wetlands. And with that, remember y'all, camp magic is real. Until next time.